When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Risking head and skin, if we're behind then never mind, we'll fight and fight and win, for we're from Tigerland.
G'day everybody and welcome to the 10th edition of Tiger Tragics. Mitchell Scott is my name. I say hello to Tony Shebeki.
Hello Mitchell, how are you?
I'm feeling good, but I'm not looking as resplendent as you in the...
Can we get a photo of this?
We will tweet this out. You are wearing the Richmond
2008 centenary jumper.
So it's the yellow and black striped, like the way Hawthorn and that have their jumper, which was the original Richmond jumper back in 1908.
Yeah, it certainly was. And it's got the old tiger in there, and it's got the Dick Smith logo in there, and it's got on the back
whose number? 25.
Jay Schultz.
So was that his jumper?
His jumper that he didn't wear on the night because it's a long sleeve version.
Well, there you go.
All players going with a long sleeve and a short sleeve, and
that's,
I was fortunate enough to get my hand on the long sleeve version.
Nice one. Hello to Carl Bianco.
Hello, gentlemen. Great to be with you after a Tiger win, and especially against Port Adelaide over at Adelaide Oval.
Well, that makes this jumper even more significant. We did play for the Jay Schultz Cup.
The Jay Schultz, Troy Chaplin, Matt White Cup. There's a few others in there
Matt
as well.
Thomas.
I think we've done Thomas.
Yeah.
Who've done the jump across from there. And the last thing I just want to say on the jumper before we do talk about the game is when I see that jumper, I think of the game. It was against Carlton. We did lose that game, but I think of Cleve Hughes. I think he kicked a bag that day.
Oh.
The Cleaver.
Jeez.
And I think that was it. That was about all we heard from the Cleaver. He had one good game.
Was Kent Kingsley playing in that game as well?
Well,
could have been, actually.
I think Richo was. I think Richo was, because it was 2008, which was... It was my first year at SN, actually. So,
yeah.
Geez, we're going a while back. Now, let's we get to talk about a good win this week. I think it was, you know, last week when we got back on the winners list after the loss to Sydney, we were, you know, just a little bit hesitant to actually read much into it. But a very good win over Port Adelaide on Saturday night that had us all jumping for joy and messaging each other. And suddenly we find ourselves back in the top four again and we're all going, you bloody beauty, how good's this? So Richmond won, came from behind, 11-10, 76. 76, magic number,
76,
guys.
I told you last week.
Told you last week, if they score 76 or more, they win. So 11-10, 76 to Port Adelaide, 8-15, 63. You know, the saying, a game of two halves, probably summarises it pretty well. Shebex, what were your initial thoughts?
Oh, no doubt about it. That first half was a dour struggle. It was an arm wrestle. There was no movement. It was just, it was like both teams had agreed at the start of the match, let's not score in this first half, and then we'll have a go in the second. It was a really strange first half of footy, and you felt at any point in time that if Port Adelaide actually got their kicking straight, that they probably had more of that ball in the first half and could have done a lot more damage to us. Fortunately, though, we went in at half time only, 2-3 down, I think it was, at half time, and I think we were 20 points or something down at three-quarter time. We got out to 18 points, 20 points.
Well, in that third quarter, we ended up... We got, I think Robbie Gray kicked the goal, which I think put it out to about 18 points, somewhere around that point. And then we went on a spree and kicked six straight, three in the third quarter, three in the fourth quarter. And we let it, we just nicked in front from a three-quarter time with that Dustin Martin goal where he took it and they kicked, him and Daniel Rioli kicked identical goals from that same pocket on the run. Same fist pump as they then ran to the bench. It was something to behold. And then we managed to rather than potentially fold like we might have done in previous times and now do what I like to call doing an Essendon, seeing as where they're at, we held firm and got on with the win and took the four
we
points.
Did. And I think it was only until I heard, and I think it was Jason Dunstall on Fox Sports who were doing the game at the time, and I think Dunstall said, in other games that Richmond have played in like this, you have felt that the other team was a chance to come back. But he said there's no feeling of that with Port Adelaide. He said Richmond have run past them, and they're done. So it was at that point I thought, I think you're right, actually. in other games, such as the game against Fremantle and the game against GWS, they were, or even though we had the lead, the other team was always thereabouts. And then, but I think Port Adelaide will be pretty much cooked halfway through that.
It
last
was quarter. Once we got out to that sort of so it hovered between the 2 and 3 goal margin there. It felt like they were never going to kick. You know, they're going to have to kick 4 to win it, basically, in the space of 8 minutes. And you just felt that wasn't going to be the case.
Carl, and I was that confident that we were going to win that I actually turned over and watched the last 5 minutes of GWS Geelong.
Did you really?
And just watch the score of the Richmond Port Adelaide game on the bottom right hand corner to
on
see if that changed.
On the split screen. Yeah. Okay. I put the Richmond game then onto the iPad for the last 10 minutes of that one. So I had the game on the Geelong GWS game on the big screen. I had the iPad going there next to me with me on the couch, which it's a great way to watch sport, actually. It means you don't miss a thing. Carl, where were you watching the game, and what did you take out of it?
Oh, first time in a while, I was actually at home on my couch with my family, and it was a great game to watch. I mean, the first half was a bit average, but, you know, a lot of people have been speaking about Richmond's pressure this year and how much it has changed. I reckon that was our best performance that demonstrated how much our pressure against our opponents has changed and improved this year. I honestly don't think I've seen a game that Richmond have played where they've applied so much pressure. And it was fantastic to see. Like, we were just at them all 4 quarters. And that, I think, was a reflection as to why the scores were so low at halftime. And then in that second half, it opened up a little bit. And right near the end of the third quarter, that was when Richmond started to look like they were going to get on top of Port Adelaide, come out in the last quarter, and they really just put the afterburners on and said, we're not losing to you guys this week. We're going to prove that we are a top 4 side and that we're going to run over the top of you guys and win against you.
Full credit to Ken Hinckley and his team. It was. I said yesterday on SEN that it was like a game. It was a pure game of chess, this one.
Yeah,
Hinckley took the first brave move of tagging Alex Rance.
Yeah, let's talk about
now, that. You don't hear that too often of a defender being tagged, but it really confused Alex, and it took him off his game in that first half.
He was the most ordinary I think we've seen in probably 3 years in that first half. I mean, he was getting ragdolled. Alex Rance doesn't get ragdolled, and there was that instance he got outmarked twice or three times by Tringo.
I don't know if he was ordinary. He just wasn't effective.
Yeah,
he still got to the play and he still did what he had to do, but it wasn't as effective of what he has been in the past.
I say ordinary, I guess, by Alex Rance standards, because the bar is so high with Rancey.
Sure.
And, you know, it's just not often you see him genuinely beaten in contests by an opponent who, you know, all credit to Jackson Trengove. I think he's good without being spectacular in most parts. So he did really well to actually make Rance accountable when he didn't know what to do. He got outmarked and outbodied by Charlie Dixon in one contest, which led to a Dixon goal. And there was that one where in the goal square where Trengove literally just flung Rance to the ground, took the ball, check-sided it through for a goal. And you just sort of thought, oh, geez, this is the sort of the night we're going to have. And then, you know, as you say, full credit to Ken Hinckley for coming up with that sort of tactic, because it was reduced the game to a grind where Rance couldn't really have his effectiveness. And then if you read on foxsports.com.au, Trent Cotchin had a really decent heart-to-heart with Rancey at halftime and sort of said, well, you know, where are you at with the game?
Do we see pictures of that on the telly?
Yeah. And that's what sort of triggered the story. Actually, Tommy Morris wrote the yarn. And, you know, Rance came out in that second half a completely different player and managed to give him a bit of a chop out in that. And then suddenly he was back to his best. I think he had 18 second half disposals and actually might have been 12 second half disposals.
That was the counter-strike by Damien Hardwick in this game of chess then? In that Rance's ability to then get loose in the second half, and also I think Hardwick's ability to have an actual word to our small brigade, who weren't as effective as they should have been, but guys like Rioli, Stegall, the new kid, kicked a couple, Trent Cotchin even lifted himself as well, and there was this general rise of play from the Richmond players, which put them back into the contest. They tried another move, Port Adelaide, I think, by moving Morby going to the midfield in the last quarter. It didn't work. And then Richmond pretty much played checkmate after that. But it was a pure footy game of chess, this one. One like I haven't seen for a long time.
I was genuinely thrilled just seeing that sort of wave that came through, which I think is what it's happened in a few games this year where we get that run on and there's that confidence. And, you know, suddenly Trent Cotchin, who's had a pretty hard first half, comes out and he ran. He's running the length of the ground, setting it up off half back, keeps running, gives the directive on, burns his opponent, takes the mark inside 50 with a little chip kick. He's directing traffic while he's doing all this. I mean, that's leadership. And then he kicks the goal, kicks an important goal for Richmond to get to sort of get us back into this contest. Because, as you say, I mean, like Port Adelaide, if they had a kick straight for chunks in that game, you just felt like there was this arm wrestle going on. And you know what? If Matty White kicks a couple of those that he missed to the right, and I think Travis Boak missed one, and you know, they have the ability to really suck that confidence out of you. But as long as they kept missing those, we were always in this game. And then, you know, guys like Dan Butler bobbed up with probably his best game and kicked a beautiful running goal in the second quarter, which just kept us in touch. And then, you know, bobbed up again with two in the last quarter, took an important mark in the pocket there and snapped it. And then, you know, Stengel, as you say, on debut, kicks two really important goals in his home state. And you've discovered something about him that I didn't know.
Yeah, I thought this was a fact. He's related to Michael O'Loughlin. Yeah, I remember hearing something in the preseason about
Michael
him being...
Michael O'Loughlin's his uncle.
Yeah, there you go.
Good genes to have in the team. Bloody oath.
And he kicks two goals on debut. Like, you don't often hear a debutant kicking two goals in their first game.
Having said that, one was gifted to him by a beautiful mark from Jack Revolt. It was classic Jack, and then the ability to open the eyes and see the handball in the square, and Stengel grabs that and runs through. That was a good play, but he was good.
I think that's indicative as well of the enthusiasm with which this Tigers side is now running. And you know, Hardwick said after the game that speed is now a genuine. You know, component that we do really well that a lot of teams don't do as well as us. It's a really strength of the team. And in that situation, typically, you know, Jack takes a mark, he'll just go back and kick the goal. Nah, there's three blokes streaming forward through the 50 wanting to make the goal the easiest option as possible. Sure enough, there's the handball. There they go.
We are that fast at the moment that Matty White would be tearing his hamstring if he was still playing for us.
He wouldn't keep up.
He wouldn't keep up.
It's brilliant. It's so fun to watch. I'll genuinely love it.
Because there was a time when Matty White was our quickest player.
He was, and we sold him off to Port Adelaide.
Yes, correct.
And on that, when he went to Port Adelaide, he was their eighth fastest player.
There you go.
So he was our
fastest. But he was generally our fastest, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Well, there was that game a couple of years ago against Port Adelaide where he kicked, I think it was a goal of the year nomination, where he burnt, might have been Dylan Grimes actually running from half back, bounce, 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 dobbed it from 50 on the boundary at Etihad. It was the Troy Chaplin goes forward game in 2014, which really sort of set up our that tilt at the finals there. Yeah. Just the last thing I just wanted to say on rants, indicative of how we then got our defensive side of the game back on track was in that last quarter. The way we're dealing with the pressure, we conceded 24 inside 50s from Port Adelaide in that last quarter. They kicked two goals. They took no marks. So, you know, the fact that we were able to just string it so much back on track from that, Brandt's got his game going. Grimes continues to go absolutely underrated. Dylan Grimes is...
And Asprey too. Having said that, I think Asprey's received some love, some genuine love this year from everyone outside of Richmond as well, not just the supporters. But you're right, it's not just Rance that brings that defence together. It is Rance, it is Grimes, it is Asprey. And then there is a massive support crew of around about four or five or six other players that either come back from the wing or work back from a half back, or even defenders as well that work back. But those three are just leading that defence so well this year. So well.
It's magnificent. I wonder whether teams are now going to get a feel of what Jackson Trengove did by tagging Rance and might go, you know what, we need to try that ourselves when we play Richmond and try and make him accountable.
Let's put him at centre-half forward.
That's not a bad idea.
Break it. What it's going to have to take. If they do that, let's just stuff him right up and throw him up at full forward.
Well, it's interesting because I think of a game like St Kilda this week where, you know, it might be tempted to play, you know, let's play Nick Riewoldt on him forward, where Nick Riewoldt will just make him run up the ground. But Rance will just go, you know what, Nick, you can run up the ground. I'll just stay back here and take cheap, unaccountable intercept marks.
We don't care, Nick, if you take a mark 90 metres out from goal. That's fine. We just don't want you taking marks 40 metres out from goal. So, mate, you run up as far as you... That'll be the attitude.
Yeah. Were there any standouts for you, Carl, from the game? Like, I suppose, you know, Dusty had his usual, you know, 30-plus and kicked a couple of goals and looked magnificent and probably get the three votes again. But who stood out to you in terms of, you know, I think there's a few players who had quite possibly their best performances in the game, but who caught your eye?
Two people stand out for me, their performance on the weekend. I'll start with Connor Menadue. I thought he was fantastic.
Best so he's game. Just working. He's just working into that, isn't he?
Mm.
4, 5, 6 weeks ago, we were still undecisive as to whether he should be in our best 22.
Yep.
I reckon he's right on that cusp now.
Yeah.
If he's not in there,
definitely.
We finally seen him play to his strength, which is speed, and we didn't. And the game plan's now suiting that. So he comes in and actually has an impact. Where you know last year and the year before that, where it's all about being a tough, grinding sort of physical thing. That was never going to be his strength because he's not big. He's still not big. He's done a couple more preseasons.
He's a Western Suburbs boy. You've got to be fast out the Western Suburbs.
Yeah. So I thought his game was good.
Who else?
Sam Lloyd. I also thought had a good game. Kicked a goal. And one thing I found with Lloydy, we hadn't really seen this from him before, from my observation this week anyway, was he was going back a lot and helping out down back, obviously with Hooley being out for the next 3 weeks now.
We'll talk about that.
We'll get to that a little bit later on. We need to have a couple of other players sort of come back, and I think we lacked the run of the ball, not in a bad way. We still managed to do it fine off coming off half back, but Hooley's really good at that, you know, receiving a hand pass or a kick from Grimes or whoever it is down back, and then really running us down the wing into our inside 50. I think Lloyd sort of did a little bit of that on the weekend. I don't know if you noticed that.
No, I did because when the team sheet came out on Thursday, actually, we all sort of, I mentioned last week, Vlosten was all right in the VFL, but he wasn't listed in the best in his game, in his return back. And you naturally sort of think, okay, Hooley comes out, Vlosten comes back in and plays off half back. And they went with Oleg Markov instead because he's got a little bit more dash and had a little bit more, you know, he's just had the runs on the board in the VFL more. He was okay without being sort of effective in a real sort of quantitative sense. So with that in mind, I think, you know, you're probably right that he did have players go back there and just give a little bit of a help out there. He did get denied a goal on the review where they all went up celebrating. It's like he slid into it in the goal square and they took it off him with the behind. Oh, I didn't have an issue with that. I think it was probably the right decision. But the two that sort of caught my eye, I mentioned Dan Butler before, kicked 3 goals. He's every week. I think we seem to fluctuate as to which of these small mosquito fleet ones are the guys actually having the most impact, and it changes from week to week. They all bob up at different times, and Dan Butler was fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. Butler's fantastic. Got nothing against him. I think he's really been a great addition to our best 22 this year, and he deserves his spot every week. He's consistent. I think he might have had one bad game since the start of the year, and he missed a week or two, I think, as well. Every game he's played has been fairly consistent. The one that I ask questions about still, about his consistency, is Jason Castagna.
He takes marks, though,
I know he clunks a mark, but in front of goal,
why
he just rushes.
Why do you look at me when you say that? Because I actually like him.
I think he's good. I think he's paying his way.
I don't mind him, and I think he gets his spot every week. He certainly brings the effort every week, but, you know, not that we really needed to kick another goal near the end there, but there was a moment where Castagna just grabbed the ball out of the pack when it hit the ground, and he just kicked it anywhere. It went through for a behind. Like, if he was a tad more experienced, he might have just taken a little bit more time.
Yeah, but that'll come.
I know, but is
it his second year? He was a rookie pick. Wasn't
he? And you know what? I really hope that someone like a Titch Edwards has taken him under.
Oh, let's hope so. Yeah,
and works with him because I think he has the ability to be very much like Edwards was. I'm not sure if he still is.
No,
but he was.
Plough mentioned him the other week as someone who's probably just dropped a little bit off. They could have, but you know, 2 years ago he was sort of on the cusp of being that next.
Yeah, really great.
Yeah, he's had it. He missed about 5 or 6 weeks with that. It was like a knee jarring injury. After round two, played out the game, and you know, he came back against Freo. He's been good without being spectacular. Plays his role, but yeah, he's not that sort of. You don't notice. I suppose you don't, at the same time, you don't notice him like you do with Dustin Martin because it's so very obvious you notice every one of their disposals.
Well, noticing Dustin Martin. can we mention the stat that I never knew even existed? 8 broken tackles in a game beats the AFL record.
He's, don't arguing, world records now. That's which is fantastic.
It's amazing.
Did
he do 2 in 5 seconds?
Yeah. Bush one hand and then bush another.
On that, how many more players in our side are trying to do the Dusty these days?
Well, Koch does it well. Cotcher's done it a couple of times.
I think he's what they could actually get him in for his contract is they can actually just pay him, top him up outside as the don't argue coach. Let's pay him an extra couple of hundred on the side in the coaching thing and make him, he's the don't argue tackling coach. Yeah. He's the, how do you get out of a tackle? They'll put some weird name on it and
there's
away you
be
go.
Sponsorship from Dons, doesn't there? I mean, they've got the Dons donk. They've got the Dons donk at the MCG on a Sunday if the ball hits the post. We need some sort of don't argue.
I like it. The other one who goes under the radar this year, and he had his probably best, again, he raises the standard each week, Kane Lambert. Kane Lambert was spectacular on the weekend. Yeah. He finished, if I check my stats. 33 disposals. I think 33 disposals, 569 metres gained. 12 of those disposals were contested. 6 clearances, 10 tackles. Like, if you talk about that pressure, he's in the crux of it. You look at the pressure acts, 29 pressure acts. Mm. That's, you know, those sort of numbers are unheard of. Josh Caddy, again, 28 pressure acts. This pressure game. From the guys that, you know, like, I know I've been a bit of a critic of Josh Caddy going, oh, is he doing enough? Success is measured in different ways, and I think it's more than just kicks, marks, and handballs and goal side, because they're the obvious things. But in this game plan, you're right, we do need to be seeing, you know, all sorts of different indicators as to why the game plan is successful, and pressure is the key word of all that. Jack was good.
Can we mention Chad Wingard from Port Adelaide?
What do you have, 30?
1,000 metres gained.
Is it a kilometre?
Is there any chance anyone could have picked him up at some point?
39. He had 11 in the first quarter, 11 in the last. 20 of those were uncontested, and 10 clearances, if you don't mind.
1,000 metres
gained. A kilometre. When you start talking about metres gained in kilometres, you know you've had a good game.
I've never heard of 1,000 metres gained.
Neither have I. I'll have to ask Luffy this week.
Surely.
That I suppose the other, let's just touch on briefly being a top four team, and you know we are now we're half a game off, if I get my ladder out here correct. So we went up. We're at 9-5, which is
now we spoke about this last week, and we spoke about how important this game was in regards. If Port Adelaide win it, they would have been a game and 20-30% ahead of us, and that might have been a bridge too far for us to get into the four. The fact we win it, we now go a game ahead, still a bit behind on percentage, but having that game buffer now makes it such an important thing for us.
You are dead right, and I think the key there is this, given the round also, there were a few other upsets there. I actually genuinely think this is the first round.
A few upsets. Have you looked at my tipping?
I got three. I was horrid. What did you get,
I got six.
Oh, what? Well, you don't know what you're talking about.
No, I got six.
You're tipping your mum?
No.
How do you get six?
I tipped St Kilda. I thought they would win against Freo. Mind you, it was a last-minute decision.
It was one of my three.
Yeah. I missed out on Melbourne and Sydney. Yeah. Like, Melbourne, I tipped.
So did you go West Coast in Melbourne?
I went the Bulldogs. No, I didn't get that one. I'll have to have a look at my tip.
Maybe you didn't get six.
No, I definitely did get six because I just got it on my footy tips app. It said, congratulations, outstanding round.
You are the best tipper in Australia.
I was going to say, by this week's standards, you deserve to win the free whopper.
I'm actually having a good year. I think I'm on like 83 or 84 for the year.
You're killing it.
Yeah, considering the year we've had. Anyway,
the point I was going to make, given how the results went that round, I actually think this is the first time now we're starting to see those gaps open up in the ladder as to, you know, who's actually going to make it. And, you know, you see Essendon go down to Brisbane and suddenly they're two games out of the eight, and you see the Bulldogs drop another game. They're 7-7. They're off the pace with, you know, pretty horrible percentage. Gold Coast and all those sort of teams now are back on six wins. So you've now got all the teams that are in the eight, there's a game clear back out to the outside the eight, and you've got you know 5-8 are all even, and then there's a gap up to the top four. So you're actually starting to get these breaks in it, and it's really nice to say that we are in that top four bracket, and you know only half a game off third, and you know only one game and percentage off second, and game and a half and percentage off it because obviously there was the draw.
And once again, it puts us back to something that we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, and it makes it even more evident now, is the fact that, and people are going to listen to this and say he's only saying it because he's a Richmond supporter. It ain't true. I'm saying it because it's a genuine fact. Richmond are a fair income premiership contender now because there is no other team above us that is putting their hand up to say, I am the one. GWS do it every now and then they get knocked down. Geelong did it on the way. Adelaide, I'm still very confused about where Adelaide are at as a, genuine good team. Exactly, Carlton nearly got them. Geelong, I still don't believe, are an absolute fair dinkum premiership chance. I don't think they are. They're third at the moment, but I don't think they've shown enough. Port Adelaide have shown that they're vulnerable. Melbourne are going backwards, but it looks like the best
injuries are going to get them,
they will. West Coast, Sydney are probably the only other team in the eight at the moment that are saying
Well, they're ninth now. They've dropped out. But yeah, they're the one outside the eight who I think everyone needs to be scared of.
Without a doubt. Having said that, Richmond are a fair dinkum team and a fair dinkum contender when it says we believe that we can win a premiership. We have the team to win a premiership. They're as good as any other team out there now. They have to be. You have to concede that.
I think you're right. And I think that I had an argument with someone on Twitter on Saturday night, actually, because Port Adelaide hasn't actually beaten a team in the eight.
Yes, correct.
When they've played them. So, you know, some teams have dropped out, but whenever they've played a team that they're in the eight and they're in the eight as well, they've gone down to them. So everyone goes, oh, they're just a pretender. And I know Ken Hinckley said after the game they have to wear that tag. But, you know, I said after the game, you know, everyone's been waiting for us to get a scalp because we did go down to Adelaide and we did go down to GWS. But we were competitive in one of those games at least. But, you know, you can only play who you're up against. I look at the eight now and we've beaten West Coast, we've beaten Melbourne, we've beaten Port Adelaide, we went down tight to GWS, we got flogged by Adelaide when they were absolutely pinging, and we haven't played Geelong yet. So you can only play who you're up against. Yeah. But you know, Port Adelaide at home is a scalp. They are a good team who... I think that's the pleasing thing that I took out of it was that, you know, we went and played a good team on their turf and showed them up. And when challenged, found another gear and they didn't. So, you know, I think you're right, Chipex. Like, I never, even back in 2015 and 2013 when we were sort of hovering around that top four mark, didn't have that air of enthusiasm like I do now because in those years there were always a couple of teams who were just at the next
Hawthorne,
level. There was a Hawthorne there and there was Fremantle and those sort of teams.
It's always going to be tough to catch them, you're right.
Any of these teams are gettable on their day and we've shown through consistency of form that we are the most consistent team of the year.
Yeah.
And I had a Geelong friend who actually wrote an opinion piece for his blog about how he goes, yeah, Richmond can win it. And he's right.
I go back to what Hardwick said about a month or so ago. We're not playing our best football yet.
He said it again on Saturday night. He goes,
"We're still not playing our best football." I'm excited. Yeah. I'm excited. We're not playing our best football yet. We're in the top four.
We're 9-5.
Can we improve our starts? The only game this year that we've actually had a decent start in against was Adelaide.
We had a good start. We had where we've gone on to win. I think that's. I actually.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
Because we had good start against GWS and then had three quarters to throw it away. We had a good start against Sydney. Nah, Freo, we were horrible, and then we made it up in the last quarter.
Yeah.
Against Sydney, we had an awesome start and then let them back in. That was interesting, actually, from the weekend was that I think by Port Adelaide home ground standards, you want to shut the crowd out of it and make them a non-factor really early in the game.
That, there was only 41,000 there. I was really disappointed in that. I thought Port Adelaide were getting close to 50,000.
They might have to bring out the tarps.
Well,
but I think it's important that when you're playing those sort of parochial crowds away, you need to make sure that they don't get on top early because the noise comes and then it becomes a bit of a mental game. The fact that it was such a grind, yes, we weren't ahead on the scoreboard, but there was in no way a means for them to get up and about with that. So I think that was an important thing to come out of it.
What's disappointing though is the fact that Port Adelaide always play Never Tear Us Apart at the start of their games. They should have played Survivor, Eye of the Tiger instead, I think, in my opinion, because it was really them surviving in the end there, or trying to survive. So,
well, I would have thought that we did tear them apart.
We did. We certainly did.
Yeah.
I mean, it was relevant because they were expecting their opponents to tear them apart, but I would have liked to have heard Survivor, Eye of the Tiger at some point as well.
I think Dylan Leach said at the end of the game they should stop playing In Excess and start playing The Pretenders.
Yeah.
Oh.
I did hear that one. I did see that.
Now, I was a little bit concerned about Nankervis. I thought Paddy Ryder took it right up to him, which was good that he had a decent contest. But it also brings up a couple of points then in regards to, once again, if Nankervis goes down, where are we at in regards to ruck support and the fact that Ivan Marić is saying goodbye to the club at the end of the year?
Well, that brings us a nice way into talking about Ivan and You know, I think Ivan's been with us since 2012, and he's been such a heart and soul player. I think Patrick Dangerfield wrote it beautifully in the Herald Sun yesterday about how it's so important to have those heart and soul players. And Ivan was never the greatest ruckman in the world, but he could grind out a game.
Yeah.
And, you know, he wasn't a pure tap ruckman, but he was physical. He made the contest. He won games. He could drop back in the hole. He could go forward and kick goals. He is kind of the archetype of what Lankervis is now. But, you know, Ivan's not belting the door down in the VFL. He's essentially hang on this year as a bit of a playing coach for that VFL side. Yep. And he's developing his cousin there. You know, if Lankervis does go down, and yeah, you're right. Like, Ryder was, in terms of pure tap rucking, was all over him.
Yep.
But Lankervis did. There was one passage of play. Yeah. He was serviceable. There was one passage of play, I think, where I'm trying to think which quarter it might have been. Might have been the third, or I think it was the third, where Lankervis intercepted it, turned the ball over, then Lankervis rang back defensively. They turned the ball back over straight to him. He took a mark. He kicked it long and turned it straight back over again. Yeah. And that was kind of a symbol of the night he sort of had, where he was in the right spots but just couldn't really have much of an effect. But super coach wise, I don't know if he broke the ton. Everyone was saying
he'd trade him out. Had him as the second best player for Richmond.
Oh, I don't know. I tend to disagree with that. I my best three were I had Dusty, Lambert, and probably Butler. I think because they impacted the scoreboard.
Does he realise how tall he is sometimes?
He's 200, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he does. Most games, that's his advantage. So there's only been a couple of games and it's been against really experienced ruckmen that he has struggled this year.
But I say that because he's always at the contest. Like, he's bending over to grab the ball and get a hand pass out. Like,
he's a very good kick.
He just acts like another midfielder, not a ruckman.
As a field kick, he's, you know, he's, for the most part, he's pretty bloody brilliant compared to a lot of other ruck stocks. You know, a lot of ruck, particularly the tall tap ones, they'll take the mark and they're just looking. There's always a player then standing there next to him for the cheap handball off. Lankervis is more than happy to go and kick it diagonally 45 metres into the middle of the ground and spot someone up. He's got that poise. He's sort of, when you look at the way he kicks it, he looks like if you were teaching kids how to kick. He's got a very good action. Yeah.
I think we certainly lack that second ruckman, the rotating ruckman. We certainly need to in the off season.
Greg was going up
done.
Again.
Yeah, like I was just about to say that there was a contest between Greg and Ryder. I mean, it worked to our advantage in the end there, but like, what's going on there?
Yeah, look, you're gonna have to use someone, so they might as well use Greg at the moment while he's there.
But he's not even that tall.
No,
Greg.
But, you know, he's not exactly. But you're gonna have to give Nankervis a bit of a break at some point.
Yeah. I think Griffiths, I read during the week, is just starting back with some very light duties at training. They haven't put a line through him, but, I mean, look, we all obviously think that's probably going to be the case. But, you know, we're dead short of one there. And, you know, it probably brings the question of, does Marich get a farewell game?
Yeah, I think he does. I reckon the last round of the season, depending on where we're at, against St Kilda.
I think if you're going to give him one, it's against Brisbane in 2 or 3 weeks when we're probably going to win it anyway. And I
love romance.
It's hard to gift games when we're
but
top
it
four.
It's so hard to gift a game when your team is doing so well this year. Really hard to break the format. Really. But having said that, look, Lankervis may need a week off at some point, so it may not be gifting him a game. It might be actual general. One bloke that I think is in desperate need of a week off at the moment, and I think it's just indicative of young football players who are playing pretty well, is Daniel Rioli.
Yeah.
He's looking just a little bit cooked at the moment.
He bobbed up with a good goal on the weekend, but you're right, like, his influence
hasn't been as good as it was in the first. I think there was plenty of times in the first half of the year that I said, the better Rioli at the moment in the AFL is Daniel.
What do you have on the way? He had 6 disposals, and 13 pressure acts. Which, when you compare that to the likes of the Caddies and the Lamberts and that, it's not quite what we're wanting from him, unfortunately. But I suppose if Bolton was rested this week and Stengel had a good debut, so you never know. They might decide that.
Well, yeah, you know, we have the luxury of doing it. We've got some good young kids waiting back that, you know, you can rotate back in if you're going to give those guys a week off.
I think, I say the Brisbane game, and I don't like to, I mean, we saw yesterday you can't afford to take Brisbane lightly, but I would be much more confident of perhaps resting a few players against Brisbane if we beat We've got St Kilda and GWS before that. And if we win, we should beat St Kilda. And then, you know, GWS at the MCG is a different kettle of fish to GWS at Spotless. You know, that, we might even go in as favourites in that game. I'm not sure. But that's sort of where we're at with that. And, if you know, I think the important thing is, I think the way it's starting to spread is we probably do not only need those three wins now to make sure we actually do make the finals, and then you make a couple more on top of that for the rest of it. We play St Kilda twice. We do have a game against Geelong down the road, down the highway. But there's probably four wins there we should be getting minimum, which gives us 13, and then, you know, maybe jag one of the other ones, and you never know. We can hang around the top four. And I think it's a season more than ever where, yeah, you can control all the results you can, but there's going to be a lot go your way based on how other teams go. Which, you know, it's not just about dictating your own form. You need a couple of results that go your way as well. So has anyone got a lasting moment of Ivan Marić in a game or the like that sort of springs to mind when you think of the big fella? There's a few of them, but he was never really sort of a highlights reel man. But if you've got one, I'd love to hear it.
I haven't got one off the top of the head. But I think I just agree with you, the fact that he was just and Patrick Dangerfield, the heart and soul of a club, just a bloke that keeps going and going and going, just a lovable larrikin. And they're the sort of guys you need around the club.
I think the elimination final against Carlton that year, 2013, he kicked a goal and he just put the fists up. I'm pretty sure that was in the elimination final.
Yeah, it was in the last quarter when the game was starting to get a bit, you know, out of our hands, and he kicked a really important goal.
It was an important goal, but, you know, we know what happened with that game. But that was a moment where
he had a really good game at the G game. I mean, he had a lot of really good games, but there was a couple where he absolutely dominated. One was against Sydney at the MCG, and he just kept dropping back into the hole and took some really important marks and grinded it out in the ruck. And I remember being at the end of that was when he sort of really the cult of Marić started. And there was another one against Sydney where he kicked the soccer goal. He like kicked like a penalty kick.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
you remember that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes. And which, you know, was so appropriate being that he's the president of what he might still be of the St Albans Soccer Club.
Yeah.
Passionate about that game as well. And you know, I know that they were having a bit of fun with that when Riewoldt kind of fell out of the way a little bit and the ball's just hovering there in the goal square and he's like, Golzano! And he ran in and kicked it. It was great.
And I have to correct you too. When you're talking soccer, it is the St Albans.
Oh, St Albans, sorry.
St Albans.
Okay. Well, I need to go down there.
It's only
the
St Albans Footy Club.
Okay. When it comes to soccer,
you've got to put a little bit of the Maltese sort of...
Of course.
Yeah, around it.
Fair enough. The biggest talking point of the last week, though, when it comes to the Richmond Football Club, is a bloke named Bashir Hooley. And we recorded this last Monday, said, oh, look, he might get careless and, you know, 3-2 would be nice. And a bit played out from there. I mean, essentially, to go back through it just really quickly, they said it was intentional. My understanding from the MRP was that they thought that he's looked at his shoulder, seen his opponent, then thrown it. So therefore, they have to go intentional. And, you know, you cop that. To have got 2 weeks, we were both sitting in the studio car when the phone call came through from Megan Huswaite saying two weeks. And we just looked at each other and fist pumped the air or run around and go, how good's this? 2 weeks, we'll take that and bloody run.
Yep.
2 weeks, Shebex.
Yeah. AFL had a different thought about that. And on that basis, I'd just like to congratulate and thank Thomas Bug for his career as an AFL player, because he'll never play again.
He's going to get...
Based on what we saw.
He is going to get absolutely squashed.
Absolutely hammered.
Yeah, they'll have the bug spray. See, unfortunately.
If anyone thinks it's going to be any less than 6-8, 6 absolute minimum.
I had Tony Sheehan was arguing on Twitter the other night that how was Hool, you know, if I don't think Bug should get any more than 4 weeks.
And Bug stood face to face, looked at him and hit him.
Hit him and put him down out of the game. This wasn't the thing with the Hooley one was, at least Hooley's was, he was running, he had an opponent running with him and he was trying to shed himself of the opponent. Now,
where Bashir was unfortunate was, Bashir's obviously just got him right in the right spot.
Yeah.
Because a hit like that should not knock a bloke out. When you're running away and you hit backwards, I think Bash's hit just got him right in the right spot. It was unfortunate for him and knocked him out. Bug's hit was a deliberate placement onto the jaw.
He's looked at him, thrown a punch, got him in the head, put him on the ground, and I think six minimum.
Based on the reaction of the AFL to Bash's 2 weeks and that they wanted four, because that they didn't think that that was a good look of the game.
And it's clearly a worse incident than that.
Look, all I ask is that the AFL Tribunal and the MRP just make the right call this time. It probably won't be the right call, but I just don't want to see consecutive nights people at the tribunal trying
Poor
to
Megan.
Work this out. Yeah, Megan in particular. Like, last week was just a joke. If we had have seen 3 weeks given to Hooley,
no,
this wouldn't have happened.
No, exactly.
Just give him three. He misses the Brisbane game. He's back for GWS. Now it's overturned by the AFL because they appeal. He gets four, misses GWS, and that's a game where we could probably use Hooley against GWS.
I wonder whether Richmond kind of did it to themselves a bit in that when they went to arguing what penalty he should have got, they themselves said 2 weeks, and you know what you generally expect in that situation is you say 2 weeks. The prosecution says four, so they'll land at three in the middle, so we'll get a bit somewhere in the middle. And but, and because of Malcolm and Waleed who went in there and their character evidence along with a lot of others.
It was, having said that though, Malcolm Turnbull's character evidence wasn't actually a letter from the Prime Minister saying,
no.
I believe it was an excerpt from a speech that Malcolm Turnbull had made
the day before launching the Bashir Hooley multicultural program, that funding that they were putting in. So it was just that is important. I think it wasn't like Malcolm Turnbull sat down and penned a letter himself. He stood up at a press conference. Richmond took the comments from the press conference and tabled them as character,
which is
evidence.
Fair enough, and I have no issue with what they did, but I think a lot of people got over the top thinking that Malcolm Turnbull actually wrote a letter about Bashir Hooley. Well, he didn't.
I think if Richmond walked in there and said, you know what, let's ask for three, they probably get it, and then everyone probably goes, oh, yeah, three, look, could have been four, but the AFL leave it. It was so grossly inadequate that the AFL had to do something. And, I was speaking to someone closely connected to Bashir on the Thursday night when the hearing was going on, and he said... The one person out of all this who's just, a bit, who cares, let's just move on with life in the whole thing, was Bashir. He was just ready to cop his whack, whatever it was, move on. He understood that he did something wrong, and he just wanted to be able to move forward. Instead, he's back there again, and he's like, well, just let me know what I'm doing, mate, and I'll serve my penalty.
Yeah.
So, that's...
You know what I don't like about it, though? And this probably isn't the form to bring it up, but it was an independent tribunal that made the decision. Now, I'm not saying...
An AFL-appointed independent tribunal.
Regardless, they appoint the people. But at the end of the day, it's a tribunal that is independent of the AFL's influence. So it's a tribunal of former players, past players, and normally an old judge who chairs the whole thing. If that's what they gave him, I don't understand why the AFL then didn't just accept it themselves.
I think...
Because had Richmond have received four for Hooley... Richmond would have walked away and said, oh, that's, yep, all right. I don't think Richmond would have appealed for.
No, I don't think so either. And certainly I think what it just comes down to is the AFL itself has these values that they've put clearly on the agenda in the last 6 weeks of, we do not want to see blokes getting hit in the head from throwing punches. We do not want to see it. We're drawing a line here.
Yeah, but that's fine. But if an independent tribunal decides that that's the decision that is made and that's the penalty... I don't understand how the AFL can say, no, bugger you, we're not accepting that.
I think the reason they clearly obviously felt it wasn't in line with those values, but you're right in the sense that if you're going to have an independent tribunal,
exactly.
You have to
have
respect
it?
The process.
Yeah, we might as well just have players go in front of the AFL, because we're getting less and less of it now because everyone just accepts their penalty, or they get given a set penalty by the MRP and they accept it. So this was the first time the tribunal had sat this year, and what was it, round 14? So if the AFL are going to interfere, why don't we just have them go up to Simon Lethlean and he'll hand out the penalty? There is no use having an independent tribunal, as same as there is no use having goal umpires if decisions are going to be overruled all the time, or there is no use of having cricket umpires if you're going to have to go and have a look at electronic technology each time to make sure they've made the right decision. Let blokes do their job and accept it.
I hear you. It's a good whinge.
Yeah, some people argue that the tribunal hadn't sat for that long that they've forgotten what to do when they're in a tribunal situation like they were. So, look, as I said before, they should have just outright came out and said, you get four down to three, that's it, end of story. What's happened, though?
Well, the system with the MRP is, I mean, as we said when we went through the box, because if it was going to be graded intentional, it was clearly high impact, it had to go. I actually thought if the AFL hadn't have appealed, you would have got a lot more, and even off the back of the Will Schofield one as well, you would have got a lot more players going, oh, you know what? I actually might roll the dice at the tribunal, because if that's what I can get, if I actually go and argue my case at a situation like Bashahuli, where everyone's saying 4 weeks and you only get two, you know what? I might actually go and not just tick the boxes and take my penance and go, I might actually argue my case and bring forward all these arguments. And you know what? If that's because the panel clearly felt there was some movement within what they could give the penalty to, I suppose, unfortunately for Basher, it was a little too much, in the sense that it was so grossly out of line with what the AFL wanted. So
But the good thing about it is that a year ago, 2 years ago, we lose Bashahuli for 4 weeks, our defence would have struggled. The good thing is that we've got the depth now, and this is what I was talking about before in regards to resting blokes, that we can bring someone in to replace Basher, and it doesn't look too different.
Yeah.
Well, you go back to last year, and when we were getting cut, where we were getting cut down so bad, was we couldn't get the ball out of our half back line, and teams were then just putting the ball back in and kicking big scores. We didn't have, last year, for a large chunk of the season, we didn't have Basher. He was out injured. We didn't have Camden McIntosh, basically, for the whole season. He played a really good role on Robbie Gray on the weekend, kept him to one goal. Dylan Grimes, so kept him to one goal, and when Dylan Grimes wasn't in, Dylan Grimes' time spent, I think he had 70 minutes on him, kept him goalless in that time. Dylan Grimes has finally had some consistency of body. He's not getting injured every second week like he was for the last 5 years. You finally got that consistency of a back line. As you saw on the weekend, Basher goes out, once the old Clarko mentality, we just replace him in another soldier, and the game plan continues and we go on. It's refreshing. Mm. Yeah, it's beautiful to see.
It is beautiful to see.
Yeah.
And I'm still waiting on our slab from the Carlton show.
Have they delivered it?
I haven't seen it. I came in here last week, the day after they'd recorded their show, and there were stubbies in the bin.
Yeah. No, I did see them last night. And Mari actually said last night, if you guys don't win the flag from the position you're in now, you guys are stuffed. Like,
what?
he was joking around. He's pulling my leg, obviously, but it's yours to lose. It's yours to lose.
Well, I think injuries are going to play. We've had a reasonably good run with injuries. We've got Reece Conker's out and Griffith is out.
It's
and
Hampson
is
out.
But we're not missing if you look at Melbourne at the moment, they've suddenly got Viney, Tom Tyson's injured, Nathan Jones is injured, Jack Watts, Hogan. They've got all that. Like, that's six of your best, five or six
Nathan
of your best
Jones.
Players. Yeah, they've got all these. We luckily, we've still got our. We've been reasonably consistent with having our best 22 out there. When a guy like Dustin Martin had a head injury, he did play the next week. When he battled soreness, he still got out there and got 25 touches. And, you know, previously they might have gone, nah, we'll give you a week off.
Yeah.
I suppose the last point we need to touch on before we wrap up for this week is Maddie's match on Saturday night. So it's the, how many years have they been doing that?
Five or six?
I think it's four.
Four, okay.
Four? So this is Matty Riewoldt's vision. Obviously Nick's sister passed away from a bone marrow related disease. And Jack's obviously who was her cousin, and the last year, I think they didn't do it against Richmond. I think it was the Saints and the Dogs, but, as they've sort of got this tradition up and going, every time St Kilda plays Richmond and it's a St Kilda home game, it's Maddie's match, and they raise money.
Purple.
So the Saints jumper's got the purple. It's a fantastic cause, everyone. And, you know, I know it is a St Kilda home game this week, but get to Etihad and try and fill the place up, because they do donate a portion of every ticket to the MRV. MRV? Yeah, MRV. Just checking that. To MRV. And, wear purple, because you do support the cause there. And, you know, Nick and Jack are absolutely wonderful drivers of it. They give a lot of time to a lot of people out there.
You've got to pay for the privilege of wearing purple, don't you? I think it's $5 or something.
Yeah. And you just donate. There'll be tin rattlers. Get out there. Yep. Do what you can. Mm. And it should be a cracking game, because as we saw from St Kilda last night against Freo, they're not pushovers. They on their day can put up a fight, and you know they found a way to kick you know 16 goals. And
I'll be interested to see how they back up the Saints after a tough
6 day break on the road.
6 day break on the road, tough win against Freo. I'll be interested to see how they back up.
They're sort of at that point where they're still trying to find that consistency of their best 22 and who that is. Is particularly their forward line structure. Is McCartan in there? Does Riewoldt play forward? Does he play on a wing? And I think the ideal lineup for them would be have all three of them up there and Riewoldt playing on a wing, but just due to conform and concussion and whatnot, they haven't been able to really sort of get them all going. I just think the important thing is, if Nick Riewoldt is asking for the ball back, and it wasn't his free kick, don't just throw in the ball, because he'll just throw the arms out, cost you a 50-metre penalty and gift them a goal, which is what happened with, was it Griffin Logue And everyone's jumping up and down about that saying, oh, Nick Riewoldt's unsportsmanlike because he called for the ball. I just think it's bad luck, mate. Like, it's actually a lesson of naivety. So Richmond players out there, if Nick Riewoldt...
Just put it on the ground?
Put it on the ground or just ask the umpire who's got the free kick. Who's got the free kick? You have time to do that. Umpires are normally pretty clear in instructing. He's got it. He's got it. Please give it back to Josh or whoever it might be. Don't because Nick will, it's clever use. I know some people are saying he cheated. I don't think that's the case. He didn't break any rules. Come on, give us a spell. What are you thinking of this game? Should we win?
Saints by 10 goals.
As you always do. Tradition sticking well.
Richmond with a win.
You don't tip margin anymore, do you?
No margin, just Richmond with a win.
I'm going to say Richmond by 4 goals. I'm wondering whether Nick Vlosten will, now that he's got a couple of games under his belt, might come in. Probably Oleg Markov. I think he's probably the one. If they feel like they've got enough run from Menadue and those types in it, maybe they... And at Eddie Had, we can use our speed pretty blistering. Yep. Conditions shouldn't be an issue. It's a night game, Saturday night, so I'm looking forward to it. We'll go to 10-5 and onwards and upwards from here with Richmond. And Shebex, we'll tweet out the photo. So at Tiger Tragics is the Twitter handle. We'll tweet out the photo of this glorious jumper that, So just to those who've just joined in halfway through here, so this was Jay Schultz's jumper from the 2000.
Does anyone actually join in a podcast halfway through?
Sometimes they do. Sometimes, really? Sometimes if people will be listening to this going, nah, I've been listening from the start. Some people legitimately do. They look at, yeah, because if you do a rundown of what's actually in the podcast, I don't know, I'm not speaking for this one in particular, but for some people in the podcast, they go, segment one, they're this, and then they do time codes for it all. And some people just go, like, for example, I was trying to find one from the Collingwood one, the Jock and Journal one, finding the audio of Scott Pendlebury talking about the Joel Selwood incident. They told me it was 12 minutes in, so I just jumped there. I didn't listen from the start. You can do that. I hope they don't. I hope you're all listening from the start because we love it. But if you, just in case you weren't, you're wearing...
I have to spread out my good stuff.
You're wearing a Jay Schultz jumper.
I am, from the 2008 centenary game for the Tigers. And it looks very much like a Hawthorn jumper. The blacks sort of fade a little bit and looks brown. But probably not too many weeks in the last couple of years that I've actually been able to wear a jumper that celebrates Hawthorn and Richmond's win on the same weekend. So
it's almost a Ty Vickery kind of jumper. I'm looking at it now. Like, that's just in honour of Ty Vickery, obviously being at Hawthorn now and being at Box Hill.
It could be. It could be. Yes, we'll get that photo out.
Beautiful. Thank you, gentlemen, for your time.
Should I say, it did fit me 10 years ago.
That's all right. If you can get it on, you can get it on. That's the important thing. Thank you, Carl. Thank you, Tony.
Thanks, gents.
Thanks, Carl.
Go Tigers.
Go Tigers. Tiger aboard, the strong and we're born, we're from Tigers.